Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I am your host, Mark Berti, the content marketing expert, bringing you three new episodes each week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgaberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. We all have different ideas that we want to see happen, that we want to do, that we want to act upon. But one of the sparks that you need, one of the skill sets, is the ability to turn inspiration into action. How do we come up with these ideas, feel inspired by them, and then take action on them instead of forgetting about them a week later or having the other idea pop up? So we're going to talk about that in today's episode. And in addition, we'll also be covering how we can create our very own well-designed businesses. So that's going to be some of the highlights in this episode. And today's guest who's going to talk with us about this is a sought-after speaker on topics ranging from work-life balance to making decisions that make a difference. She is the host of the top-rated interior design podcast, A Well-Designed Business, which airs 2 times each week on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Her podcast is the definitive resource for interior design professionals interested in operating a profitable and productive business. Her book, well, her first one actually, The Making of a Well-Designed Business, is an Amazon #1 rated international bestseller. Today's guest for episode 272 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Luann Nigara. Luann, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, can you just come around with me everywhere I go and just introduce me like at the grocery store? That's amazing. Seriously, that's like, all right, this is going to be good.
Have you liked that intro, Luann?
I did.
I promise on that. But you could take the podcast episode with you and
have that. I might have to.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for stopping by. And I feel like we have a really good conversation here because, like, a lot of people, like, we do come up with ideas, we have all these big dreams, these big ambitions, but how do we turn all this into action that we're doing in order to get closer to our big goals, our well-designed business? So we're going to talk about that. Before we do, I'd like to get some background. I mentioned earlier you wrote the book, The Making of a Well-Designed Business. Can you share with us a little bit why you decided to write the book, some of the backstory behind that?
Okay, sure. The book is really a culmination of my experience together with my husband, Vince, and our cousin, Bill, in running Window Works. Window Works is our primary business. And in that business, we are a custom window treatment and awning retailer. It's a brick and mortar business. We've had it together. We're in our 36th year. In 2018 is our 36th year. And it's really a reflection of what were the key steps and principles and practices that contributed to the success of our business? Because our business doesn't just roll along. Thankfully and gratefully, our business is highly successful. And in fact, in 2018, we're recording this at the end of the summer in 2018, and we are on target for the end of this month to meet last year's sales revenue level. And of course, we're going to far exceed last year's sales revenue, gross sales. And so here we are 36 years later with a business that continues to grow and to prosper. And so I sat there and I thought about it because in my coaching, I coach with a lot of businesses and interior designers in particular about how to be profitable. And I said to myself, you know, I got to sit down and quantify this. What the heck did we do that really helped contribute this success story? And so that's what the book is about. It's about the things that you have to look at as a business owner and make sure that you cover all of these steps so that you can set your foundation for running a successful business.
And it's really interesting that you looked at your business and you were looking to see, okay, what's working here and how can this help more people? I mean, I really like when people try to help others and you can look at what you've done and pass that on to other people. So I really love that backstory for why you started to write your book and now it's published and making of a well-designed business. And one of the things that I want to talk about is the work-life balance. I've had a lot of different thoughts on this that range from you got to put every minute in equally, like 1 minute of work, another minute in life. I've had another thought where like it's like it's a seesaw where some days it's all work, some days it's all life. And then what I'm trying to think of lately is that like not to have this divide between work and life. So normally I'd ask someone like, how do you have a better work-life balance? But I'm wondering, how can we love our work and embrace our lives outside of our work at the same time?
Well, it's funny because I have to say I come at this conversation work-life balance a little differently. I am in my mid-50s, and so I'm looking back and recognizing certain things that maybe as a younger person, you are in the thick of, right? And so when I talk about and I think about work-life balance, I understand this concept now, this premise that has been recently introduced that there is no such thing as work-life. Like, in other words, the work-life balance is that life is balanced, right? And that's what you were sort of alluding to, that the quality of your day reflects the quality of your life. And I get that. And I ascribe to that. And I call that the micro vision, the micro cosmic look of your work-life balance. And so in that regard, in the micro vision, I do agree that each day you have to make a decision. Am I going to fit my exercise in today? Am I going to be the one to take my children to school today? Am I going to carve these things into my day? Am I going to walk away from my desk at a certain point in order to go to my child's soccer game, right? So that's a daily microcosm decision. And I agree with that. And I have done that throughout my whole business life. We have two daughters that played softball all the way from 5, 6 years old, all the way through D1 college sports, played softball. And so we didn't miss a single game. And we were very happy and proud of that. And that would have happened. So that's a daily decision on that work life, right? So it's today I have 16 things I have to do, 4 clients to see, but I've got a softball game at 3:00. Peace out. I'm done. Right. But then the other part to me of work-life balance is the bigger view, the macro view. And a lot of times I work a lot with women and business coaching women. And a lot of times I am working with a young business owner in their 30s and they've got young children and they are struggling with wanting to have an interior design firm or some other creative type of business that requires them to work 8, 10, 12 hour days. And then it's the juggle between what do I do with my kids and how does that happen? And there, I don't think it's really, nothing is not possible. But the point is to not kid yourself. If you want to grow a big business, it's going to take big time, is my opinion on it. And what I like to do is counsel people is, look at the seasons of your life. When your children are from the time they're born until they're out of high school, they need your attention. They need you to be at the science fair and at the softball game. And they need you to be there to talk with them after school about a tough day on the playground. Okay. So that might not be the season of your life to grow a business or a firm with 15, 20, 25 employees, or even 6 employees. And because if you're not capable of doing both, then you need to make a decision. Which season of your life is it? Is it the season of your life to to be that parent, or is it the season of your life to run a big business? And I understand that you look and you think, well, they're just born and I can't wait 20 years, but you can. That's the truth. You can build your business within the parameters of the micro vision of your work-life balance. And then you can always, the 20 years goes faster than you could even imagine. And at that point, you've had a 20-year career building your business, honing your skills, building your client base, building your relationship with vendors. And when that kid goes off to college, yeah, you can do a 14-hour day if you want. So that's my sort of, you know, two-sided view on work-life balance. And that's where you get me talking. So
that is an interesting view. And I feel like a lot of it, I mean, based on your answer, is what's important to you at the time. And I mean, for you, like being with your children, something very important to you, as you mentioned, not missing a softball game. So it's something where you have to say, okay, what are the things that allow me to have a high quality day? What are the things that I have to be doing today? And then you just go ahead and do those things. Sometimes you're working all day, other times you're with your family all day. It all depends on how that day looks. And one of the things you mentioned is that to have a successful business, something like that, like you have to put in the hours, you have to spend a lot of time working, and like things like that, like they can inspire us. Like some people listening may think, okay, now I'm gonna work harder on my business and also like be there for my family. Like on some days I'll be with my family, on other days, like, you know, based on what that day dictates, you should do to have a quality day. But when we get inspired to put in more work, to pursue this new project or ambition, the inspiration doesn't always stick. And I'm wondering, how exactly do we get the inspiration to stick?
I think you have to attach your result to it. So for instance, if you have this, whatever your inspiration is, again, if there's some inspirations that are huge inspirations, you've got a podcast, Mark. So maybe your huge inspiration is, I want to be nationally known and have my own TV radio show on Sirius Radio, right? Like maybe that's your big inspiration. And so what you have to do is attach the result to the inspiration. What will happen from it? What do I have to do each day to work towards it? Maybe your smaller daily inspiration is, I want to get this podcast edited and out the door so that it loads up to Libsyn on time. And so I'm inspired today to get my podcast out. What do I have to do? So in either case, whatever we're talking about, big picture, little picture, big project, little project, it's always to, when you're inspired to do something, attach the result to it. If I do these five steps today, I will get the result. So if I turn out a really well-produced podcast every single week, for 2 or 3 or 4 years, and I don't drop the ball, then I might get this result. So that gives you the gas every day to keep plugging. On a single day, if my result is, I need this podcast out on Friday. I need it to be the best it can be. And so these are the steps that I have to do. So in the moment, the inspiration is sustained because you're focused on the goal, the result of it. Because that's what happens. People get inspired. They put lists and ideas in notebooks, but they don't translate them into results. And then once into results, they don't then back them out into the steps that it takes to achieve those results. It just becomes this inspiring idea in a notebook. You understand what I mean by that? Does that make sense, in other words?
Yeah, and like with the results that we're after, I like that idea of focusing on the results and things you can do to get there. Because if you have this big idea, but it's just an idea, like, how do I get there? And I think it's within that question where if you don't do your due diligence to find the answer soon enough, that's when the inspiration starts to die. In my opinion, there's a lot of different philosophies out there, but I feel like, well, like, how can I do this? And like the longer it takes for you to answer that question, the harder it is to tap into that inspiration. But when we know what
we're, but can I just say, or it's if you haven't attached your why to it. So if you have this big inspiration, you have this big idea, but you haven't gotten very clear on why you want to do it, then it gets very hard to even break it down and come to those steps. And I think that's a lot of the reason that lag between the idea and the execution is because there isn't a clear reason for doing it. So again, just to continue to use the podcast as an example, since we're both podcasters, we both know very clearly how much work goes into putting out a quality podcast. It looks like, hey, just, you know, flip on a microphone, but we both know that it's a heck of a lot more than that, right? So if the big inspiration is have a podcast, but you haven't attached why to it, you've only attached a result. So the result is I want to make more money. Like, I think having a podcast is going to bring people to my business and I want to make more money. But if the why isn't also clear, well, why is the podcast the way to do that? Why is the podcast the way to make more money for my primary business? Because if that why doesn't then relate to that inspiration, well, the why is because I love meeting new people. The why is I'm insatiable for information. The why is that this really speaks to me as a person, this medium, and therefore I will be good at this, and therefore this supports my result that I want. And now the inspiration is built into this project, right? But if the why is because the result is I want more money for my business, but the why is because somebody told me that podcasting is good if I want to make money for my business, that's not a why that's going to sustain an inspiration. It's not a why that's going to fulfill and feed all of the hard work that goes into, let me start a podcast. Make sense?
Yeah, I'd like having a good why behind it, because if your why is to make more money, like, again, going back to the podcast, well, like, you could do affiliate marketing, you could do a blog instead, you can create YouTube channels. The thing is, when you have a bad why, like, again, in the example, why? Oh, because I want to make money. There are so many different things you could be doing in part to fulfilling that why, to the point where, okay, podcasting didn't work. Well, I just try something else. And if that doesn't work, I'm still pursuing my why. So it's got to be a lot more meaningful than something like, oh, I want to make more money. So I really like how you mentioned not just attaching the result, but also attaching the why to.
Right. Because the inspiration is the big idea, but the inspiration has to have those other components to it, right? It has to have something that's authentic to you. It has to resonate with you, and it has to produce a result that aligns with the things that you are focused on at that moment in your life, in your career. And when they all come together, that's when the magic starts happening.
And you mentioned a very important word there, which is focused, because some people, I feel like they set, like, let's say they're inspired and they have these goals for themselves, but then different things pop up in the way, distractions. So how exactly can we continue to take action towards the right objectives instead of getting distracted by things that may not be moving us closer to our goals?
Well, that is a mechanism of truly understanding your mission, your company mission. So if you have to know, again, it's wrapped up in your why, and it's wrapped up in your results and your goals. So for instance, my primary business is custom window treatments and awnings, as I said. So yes, I have the ability to put together a decent room. I've been in the design and decor industry for 36 years. I certainly could do it better than the average person, not hold a candle to an experienced, talented interior designer by any stretch of the imagination. But the fact of the matter is myself compared to 80% of my consumer clients, I could put together a nicer room with the carpet, the furnishings, the wall hangings, the accessories, and so forth. But the thing is, as a company, my mission is to shade and provide light privacy at the window. That's what we do. And so when I think about, should I put furniture in my showroom? Well, I don't know. Just because I'm capable of telling somebody that that's the size sofa they should have in their room, is it really smart for me as a business person to have that in my company mix? Well, no, because it doesn't support my mission. My mission is to provide light, shade, privacy at the window, right? So it doesn't work. It works for the awnings. It works for the window treatments. It works for the window film that we do. And so that's how you check yourself. You get very clear. What is my company about? What are my goals? What is my mission? And then every time that little new shiny object comes along, you check yourself. Am I doing this because I can do it? Am I doing it because it's just interesting? Or am I doing this because this is a legitimate, bona fide way for me to continue to fulfill my company mission and add more profitability to my company? So you got to be, you know, cutthroat. It's not a hobby. So you add hobbies, right? You take a yoga class and you leave the yoga class and the instructor says, maybe you should try Pilates. And you're like, yeah, maybe I'll try Pilates. But this is your hobby. The other is your business. Right. Every little rabbit hole you go down theoretically takes resources with it. Even if those resources are just your time and energy. So you have to make sure that you're very diligent in first establishing your company mission and what it is the goal of your company is. And then all of your decisions that you make easily are made because they have one criteria. Starts with, does it fulfill my company mission? If the answer is no, off the list, go to a next inspiration, right?
And I really like that distinction between hobby and business. And I know a lot of people, like, hobby is just like something you do for fun. Business is something more serious. But your distinction is a lot better, where hobby is like, okay, you're doing a yoga class, Pilates sounds something interesting, like, oh, sure, I'll do that too. But with business, if you have that mentality, oh, sure, I'll do this, oh, sure, I'll do that, you are going to, as Luann mentioned, run through your resources. And that includes time, which is something you cannot get back. You can invest money into something and make that back, or even if it's a complete loss, just like make it back doing something else, but you cannot get your time back. So it's like, oh, sure, I'll do this, this, and the other thing. That's a lot of resources you have to invest and spread yourself thin. So it's really good to get clear on the goals that you're setting for yourself. And I feel like that's one of the things that could be holding a lot of people back, where they're just not clear on their goals and they're letting all these distractions get in the way. But Luann, what else do you believe holds most people back from being able to unlock their full potential?
Not having established systems for running their business. It's absolutely critical that you figure out the best, most efficient way to do each particular task in your business and set it as a bar, a gold standard of this is how this task is executed. And it doesn't mean that you don't evolve the steps over time. It doesn't mean that you don't change them over time, but it just means that you wake up every day and you know exactly how you do something. So for instance, if somebody was a hair salon, a stylist, if somebody says to her, oh, please give me, you know, a bob cut, there aren't 15 ways to do that cut. There is probably 3 ways to do it, right? Because there's always allowing for creativity. But the simple fact is there is a proper way to execute that hairstyle. And so in order to be successful and be able to do that hairstyle, not one time, not 3 times, but 3,000 times, you must have a way of doing it, a system of doing it. And that is one of the most... The easiest ways that a business owner falls down is that they do not understand that from answering your telephone to placing your purchase orders to receiving your product to building your courses, if they're online courses, to executing in a social media marketing strategy, there must be a system and a way that you do it so that you don't do it once and it works out fine. And the third time, well, you got lucky and you happened to hit the ball again and it went and you were successful. No, you need to be able to duplicate that every day over and over and over. And when you have a system, that's how you're able to duplicate the success. Once you have the fine tuning of what's the best way to do it, you want to be able to produce that result every time. And by establishing a system for that, you can. And then the other really awesome part about taking the time, which it does take time, to establish your systems for every task, is when it's time to hire an employee, It's not like, well, okay, this is how I do this. And 3/4 through the training, you know, hour, you're like, oh, I forgot to tell you that I also do this too. Mm-hmm. Oh, right. And then 2 weeks later, you know, you're not doing this. I really need this. You never told me that part. I didn't tell you that part. You see, now it makes it easy to onboard new employees. And then, of course, it even makes it easier to have those employees help you train and onboard the new employees behind them. So there becomes your scalability as a business owner.
Systems are very important for business. I mean, Luann, that's a really great point that you touched on. I have a lot of systems for my business, from running the podcast to preparing for an interview to show notes. It's very vital to have systems in play. I mean, Luann pointed out a lot of good reasons, so I won't go into those again. But just that whole idea of having systems in play, whether it's you yourself or you've got people working for you, that's going to make a big difference. And one of the things that I also believe makes a big difference is our ability to educate ourselves by consuming content. So with that in mind, Luann, I'm wondering if you could share with us 3 books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Okay. Well, my first and most favorite book of all time that I was introduced to when I was 10 years old by my aunt, Honey, is Og Mandino's book, The Greatest Salesman in the World. And at face value, I'm sure a lot of people, if they haven't heard of it, went, well, I don't need a book on how to be a salesman. And the reality is that, first of all, it's not a how-to book to be a salesman. It's a parable. And you read it in 45 minutes flat. But the reality of it is if you are a business owner, you are a salesperson. Whether you are tasked, if you have grown your business large enough that you have staff underneath you and maybe you have sales reps, that's terrific. But certainly until you reach that point of your business, you are a salesperson. And for all of time, if you're the owner, you are always going to be the number one advocate for your business. And so I love that book. And I was, like I said, introduced to it at 10 years old and probably have read it 25 times. More current and more applicable books, I think, are The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. This is very illuminating in understanding if you're struggling with running a profitable business. My guess is that you are probably the technician in your business rather than one of the other two roles. And therefore, these other roles, the entrepreneur and the manager, are probably non-existent in your business. And so this book, Michael Gerber, has a fantastic way of helping all of us understand the differences in the roles that we must cover as a business person, and also in explaining the importance of it. And then the other book, I'm going to share it, even though I'm just partially through it, because the first 3 chapters have just so impressed me. And it's called Rocket Fuel by Mark C. Winter. And I was just recommended this book a couple of weeks ago by a designer friend of mine, Laura Umansky. And as I said, I'm only 3 chapters in it, and I just keep going, whoa. So I think it's I'm looking forward to finishing the end of it, but I have to say I feel very confident that even at the end of it, I would be happy to recommend it based on the first 3 chapters.
Luann, thank you for those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes, marketbirdie.com/E272. We'll also throw in Content Marketing Secrets in there as well, because the audio version just came out. So that will be in the show notes as well. And one of the things that I also want to address is that while I believe that it's great to consume content, to self-educate, like it's very powerful. One of the common things that I also see in a lot of people is learning from their mistakes, learning and becoming better from the challenges that they have to encounter throughout their journey. So with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us 1 big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
Do you mind if I share 2?
Go for it.
Thank you. One is a practical lesson. One is, I remember the very first recession that we faced. We were dramatically unprepared for it. And I would say it first started with our mindset. on it. My husband and I are both type A people, and we are both the type of people that we fully believe that we put our mind to anything and we're going to accomplish it. And so because of this, because of our willingness to work hard and to do whatever it takes, when I remember when we faced our first recession in 1993, 94-ish, I don't remember the exact year. Maybe it was 92. I remember us seeing, feeling, hearing the writing on the wall, but relying on our can-do attitude to think we would get through it. And that isn't to say that we didn't eventually make changes. We made big changes. I actually talked about one of the changes in the book, but we made them way too late. We adjusted way too late, and we ended up having to make a very significant change. And it was the single most stressful thing that we have ever endured as business owners. And it was significant. There were just days when I would be going to a new client's home and about to ring the doorbell and knowing full well that I needed to make a sale at this house this day and leave with a check in order to make my payroll for my employees that week. But at the same time, I was so overwhelmed and so stressed and so beyond rational thinking that as I would ring the doorbell, I would literally say to myself, please don't be home. Please be home and buy a sale. Please don't be home. Okay. You know, like I was just so conflicted because I was so emotionally spent. And that was a huge, huge lesson. And so what happened was when we faced our next recession, we took measures faster, but still not quite fast enough. And it wasn't until we went through our fourth recession that the third one was pretty good. And the fourth one, we didn't miss a beat. We honestly, the whole world was screaming, crying, businesses were closing, and we were open, we remained profitable, and we survived it. And so the big lesson is that if you're newer in business and you start to see markers and you start to see things above with your profitability going down, is not to put your either two business owners do one of two things. They put their head in the sand because they're afraid, or they are, you know, like us with their hubris and thinking that we'll be fine. So neither is good in that regard. You must be nimble. And then the other big lesson that I learned in all these years in business is that there was a moment about 10 or 12 years ago that was after many years of me thinking to myself, you know, I don't know if I did anything significant with my life. It was probably around when I was about 40 years old, thinking, is this what you're going to say? Is this what your obituary is going to say? You had a window treatment company, and it wasn't a strong thing. It wasn't something that, you know, I was crying in my coffee cup or my wine glass over. It was just this nagging, you know, is that really what you're going to do? Is that all you're going to do? And it bothered me subconsciously, thinking that was all my contribution to the world was. And then this nagged at me off and on for 2, 3, 4 years. Not, like I said, not front brain, very, very deep inside brain. And then one day I was with a client who had been our customer 3, 4, 5 times in those years at that point. And I say to her as I'm leaving and she placed her order, what I say to every customer, thank you so much for calling Window Works. We really do appreciate and value your business. And she just popped up. She turned. She goes, are you kidding me? She goes, who else would I call? She goes, your company is amazing. She said, the people that you have working for you, they love what they do. Every time you come, it's like I'm seeing an old friend. I love that we catch up. I love that your installers show up on time. I love that they take their shoes off if it's raining. I love that your company checks in with me with statuses and lets me know what's going on. She goes, are you kidding me? I wouldn't use anybody else. And Mark, in that moment, I realized that we had created something really amazing and that I wasn't just a window treatment salesperson, that I was, with my husband and our cousin, somebody who had contributed to our community, who had created a community around our brand, who was running a business with integrity that meant something to us, to our employees, and to our customers. And I want to share that because we sometimes get so siloed in to what we're doing that we don't realize all of the lives that we touch through our employees, our customers, our vendors, and how if you do it well and you do it with integrity and you do it with pride, it really doesn't matter if you're just running a window treatment company or you are, you know, saving the world with, I don't know what. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's something to be proud of if you can live in your passion and serve your customers and serve your employees and fulfill that and just acknowledge it in yourself and appreciate it. And so I like to share that lesson with younger entrepreneurs.
Luann, thanks for taking the time to share two lessons and some of the challenges that you faced on your journey. And that idea that you don't really know what kind of impact you have on people until sometimes they tell you, like, this is a really great job, or I wouldn't go with anyone else. You're doing really great work. I appreciate your business, what you're doing. So I feel like we all underestimate the amount of impact that we're having. And like, that's not to say like, hey, like hubris, like I'm creating all this impact, even though I don't see any people like acknowledging me for it. But it's like, you are creating an impact already. And some people someday may come up to you and thank you for doing that. And that should be inspiration for you to create a deeper impact, reach out and impact even more people. So a lot of great insights throughout our time together. But one question I want to wrap up with is, Luann, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
I guess, are you on a daily basis truly looking in the mirror and deciding to make your life happen the way you dream it and vision it to be? So are you wishing for it, or are you making conscious decisions in order to make it really happen? Because you have the ability to do that. Every single day, every single moment, you make a decision to do one thing or the other. And are you making good decisions every day that support the running of your business, of your life, of your family, of your relationships? Because if you are, then things should be going pretty well. And if they're not, my guess is that there are more decisions than just a few in a day or in a week or a month that you're really choosing the easy way out as opposed to doing what you know you need to do in order to be successful.
Luann, thanks for sharing with us that great question. All of great insights throughout our time together. If you guys want to keep in touch with Luann, get her book, The Making of a Well-Designed Business, Turn Inspiration into Action. And you can also check out her top-rated interior design podcast, A Well-Designed Business. In addition to those resources, Luann, is there any way in addition that we can reach out to you and stay in touch?
Sure. I am. My website is luannnigara.com. It's LuannNigara.com. I'm on Instagram at luannnigara, and that's fun way to interact with people there. I'm also on Facebook at A Well-Designed Business and welcome interaction there as well. And then if you have a direct email, and I mean, if you have a direct question and you would like to email me, it's info@luannnigara.com. And as I mentioned, I do business coaching with entrepreneurs. I run masterminds for entrepreneurs, and you know, happy to be a resource if anybody needs anything.
Luann, thank you for sharing with us all those ways to stay in touch. Those will all be in the show notes. Once again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I really do value and appreciate the opportunity to be here with you today. I love what you're doing, and keep doing it well. You're doing a good job, Mark. Thanks.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn